We're starting a new series. It's really exciting. We're going to discuss great Torah builders, people who made the Torah world that we know today. Can you imagine a person who at the end of his life was feeding 17,000 orphans? 17,000 orphans were getting fed because of his efforts. He created many, many Batei Yaakov. He was the founder of the famed Panovich Yeshiva, right? Panovich Yeshiva is one of the greatest, biggest yeshivas in the whole world. Started with six people. Reb Chaim Friedlander from the Sifzei Chaim, you know that sefer? Sifzei Chaim, student of Dessler. He was one of the founding students. Gershon Edelstein, the current Rosh Yeshiva. Yaakov Edelstein is a big, famous Rav today. And another three people. They started the Yeshiva Panovich. Together with who? With the Panovich Rav. That's what the Panovich Rav. And that became what it is today, one of the greatest yeshivas in the whole world. So that's what we're going to study, and that's what we're going to discuss today. You have in front of you Yosef Shlomo Kahaneman. The famous Panovich Rav, as you see, was born in 1886 until 1969. Okay? And here's some points about his life. We're not going to discuss those. I want to focus on certain specific aspects of who he was. And this is like the greatest thing we can do in a leadership class or seminar to try and understand the ways of some of our great rabbis and leadership that they provided and gave and showed to us. More importantly, even than the fact that he created Panovich Yeshiva, right? If you know about the yeshivas, almost all yeshivas in Israel, many, many of them, are from students of his, students of Panovich, the one who made their own yeshivas all over Israel. So most of the Torah in our hands today in Israel, not all of it, but most of it, is the efforts of this great man. Okay? So we're going to learn about him a little bit. The first thing I want to focus on is his Mesiras Nefesh. How hard he worked and how great he... The efforts are the unbelievable, unfathomable, unhuman almost efforts that he put in to make things happen. Now, to appreciate his efforts, we have to appreciate something else first, right? Who's it easier to run around and raise money and not be home, right? Someone who loves learning or someone who doesn't love learning, right? It's an obvious answer.
Who doesn't like learning?
The person who, it's easier for the person who doesn't like learning, right? Who is it easier to leave your student? Someone who likes teaching and is a good teacher, a good orator, or someone who's not a good orator? The Panovich Rav was a phenomenal, phenomenal Talmud Chacham. Okay? Rav Aaron Cutler, who was considered by many to be the Eloi, the greatest genius of Europe in his time, and went on to found the Lakewood Yeshiva, said if the Panovich Rav wouldn't have to deal with all of his business, wasn't so busy, you know, building the yeshiva and fundraising, like we'll talk about in a second, we would be like the peels of a garlic in front of him. You know what garlic is, guys? Garlic. Klipas Hashem. We would be like peels of garlic in front of the Panovich Rav. That's what Rav Aaron Cutler said about him. Another Rav said, every small tosis and shas, not just the big ones, every small tosis and shas was in his back pocket, right? He was an unbelievable, unbelievable genius. Now, not only was he an unbelievable genius, make sure my phone's off, I hope everybody does the same. Not only was he an unbelievable genius, he was an unbelievable orator. He was an unbelievable Maggid Shir. He knew how to say a Shir, right? So for such a person, he was away how many months a year often? Take a guess. Six? Let's go up. Higher?
12.
No.
11.
9. Very often he was gone 9 months a year in order to raise money for the yeshiva because there was nothing. And he gave the yeshiva over effectively to other people. Who did he give the yeshiva over to? You've heard some of the names. Rav Dessler. Rav Shach. Shmuel Rozovsky, the Dubovarsky. And I want to just point out on the side, that was another part of his greatness. Very often, you know that Rosh Yeshivas, they only like Magidi Shir, who don't steal their thunder. You know what I'm talking about?
What?
Steal their thunder.
Like if you had
they don't want anybody competing for the main role in the yeshiva. You understand that Rav Chatzka Levinstein, who was also Mashkiach in Panovich, said when the Panovich Rav comes, he goes, he goes. It's almost like a guest coming in. No one notices him, no one sees him, because he was so busy and he'd given the yeshiva so fully over to other people. It was such a tzidkah, such a righteous act to do that. Okay? So, he himself said that I gave up on the Gaon Mipanovich, I gave up on the genius of Panovich for the yeshiva of Panovich. I read an article one time, a sister of a Talmud, so I'm running around in Chutz Laaretz one time, so I'm running around raising money in the heat. And her brother was learning in Panovich, and she called up her brother and said, you know what? I saw how hard the Rosh Yeshiva is working, so you can learn. I hope you're going to learn double time now. So he's told the story over to the Panavichurov. He said, double time? You should be learning seven times. Seven times harder than you're learning for how much effort I'm putting in to make it fit. And besides that, I know you guys can't imagine this, but some of you might be wealthy one day. Remember when those great Rosh Yeshivas come, Avram, and you're making millions of dollars, treat them with respect. Give them money. Everybody who was raising money back then had bizyonis. You know what bizyonis means? It was embarrassing. It was difficult. You're knocking on doors. People weren't just, it's hard to imagine turning to have worse stories we'll talk about maybe one day. How even the greatest Gedolim, four Gedolim one time, there's a story of Aaron, or Moshe, the Novominsky Rebbe, Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, we're all together, the Kapishin Terebbe, and a businessman told the secretary, tell him I'm not home. Can you believe it? He said, tell him I'm not home. You lied to five Gedolim, you know. Lying to one Gedolim is bad enough. He lying to Hasidish Gedolim is bad enough. He lied to Litvish Gedolim. Lied to Litvish and Hasidish? There's no Svarim in there, but he would have lied to them also, right?
Svarim, that house would have been destroyed.
Litvish, Hasidish, five Gedolim he lied to. And then who was there? There was a Chaver Knesset with them. Shlomo Lawrence is the person who wrote this book, who had a lot to do. He was from Chaver Knesset. Yeah? So he said he put his Chaver Knesset card down. Ever tell you guys this story? He put his Chaver Knesset card down on the table. You know, MK. So the secretary says, oh, wait a minute. He goes inside. Ah, Shalom Aleichem. It's such an honor to have a Chaver Knesset. Such an honor to have a member of Knesset here with me. So Shlomo Lawrence, I read from his word, from his pen, I read this story. He said, I don't know how I got the gumption to say it. I turned to him and he says, do you know what Gehenna is? Do you know what hell is? He said, there's not a place in hell deep enough for you because you insulted Gedolei Yisrael and you honored me, Chaver Knesset. And it's right between the eyeballs, he said it to him. So I don't know how I got the gumption to do it. But that was what it was like, you know? So you can imagine one single, and then eventually, of course, the man ran after them and gave them a donation. And they weren't even asking for their own yeshivas. They were asking for Chinuch Atzmai. It wasn't even, anyway. But this is difficult. So I want you to hear for a second how Shlomul Rozovsky, who was the most famous of the Rosh Yeshiva in the Panavicharov's time, describes him, his efforts. After the terrible Chorban of the Jewish, even when he was younger, before the Shoah, when Bedor, the Chavetz Chaim, and Reb Chaim Ozer, and all the Gedolei Olam that were there, he was still then amongst the first. He was then already, as a young man, in the first row of Gedol Yisrael. But after the Chorban, he took off his crown of Gadol Ador B'Gon Olam, of the genius of the generation, and the Atara, and the crown of being a Manhig Yisrael, the person the Kalei Yisrael would go to with his questions, even though he stayed a Gon. But the crown, he took off for himself. Because he saw the purpose of his life was to be making Torah. Purpose of my life is to make Torah for the Jewish people. Right? To make yeshivas of Neitar and yeshivas lebalabatim. We're going to talk about that in a second. Yeshivas, yarchi kalabatim, omostos for children and orphans and all things like that. So here was a man, that was a mesiras nefesh enkud dugma. So I could learn all day. I love learning. I could have talmidim. I have a yeshiva. But I give it all up because the Jewish people need something else from me. They don't need me to be sitting and saying the greatest shurim. What they need from me is to what? What they need from me is to go build a yeshiva, to build a yeshiva world for the next generations. This was the Panavicharov was. And I want to tell you a vort that he used to say over, which maybe is what gave him the power to be able to do this. Okay? Bahaftas Hashem Alekecha, let me finish the pasuk. Bahaftas Hashem Alekecha, what? Kol levavcha, kol nafshecha, kol modecha. Right? Love God with all of your soul, all of your possessions, and all of your nefesh. Now, why does the Torah, why does the Bible have to point out all these things? So the Chazal tell us, the rabbis tell us what? There's a person who loves his money more than himself. Could you believe it? There are people like that. Take my life, but don't take my money. What are they going to do with the money? I don't know. Okay. They love their money more than themselves. For that person, what does he have to give up for the love of God? His
money.
There's a person, normal, regular people who love their selves more than their money. For that person, the Torah says, you have to give up your life. So the Chavetz Chaim said, what's the principle? Whatever is most beloved to you, you have to give that up for God. Huh? That's for the love of God, you have to go, whatever, that's the principle that the Pasuk's teaching us. So he said, for us, the Chafetz Chaim said, for us, B'nai Torah, what's the most beloved thing to us? What do we love more than anything else?
God.
God, what, well, yeah, that one work. Torah, we love Torah, we love to sit and learn. That you have to give up also, for the love of God, that you have to give up. Just a week ago, a week and a half ago, we had the Yahrzeit of Rav Noach Weinberg, and often when I speak of Rav Noach Weinberg, I quote that also, that's what he did. He loved, Rav Noach loved learning, he was a tremendous Torah genius, but he gave it all up. And I was busy all the time. And Panovich Rebbe was the same type of character. Okay, same types of persons. Okay, so that was his Mesiris Nefesh and his greatness of Torah. Next is, thing I want to talk about, his dreams and visions. Do you dream, guys? It's not enough to have Mesiris Nefesh. You have to know what you're being Moser Nefesh for. What am I sacrificing for? What am I trying to build? Someone commented to him, someone said, you know, Panovich Rebbe. People loved him. He had an unbelievable personality. Panovich Rebbe. Says, all your dreams were fulfilled. You know, look, today you look back 30 years later, you look at Panovich, big yeshiva, you know, all the things, right? He says, how did you fulfill all your dreams? He said, it wasn't that I fulfilled more dreams. I was just dreaming more about more things. A lot of my dreams weren't fulfilled, but I had so many dreams. I was working so hard and had such vision, such dreams that there was what to be fulfilled and not fulfilled. Okay? In 1940, when he came miraculously over, he wasn't thinking about Panovich. He was thinking about 18 yeshivas. You understand? Someone in a world, today we look at a world that has so many yeshivas and it's full in Israel. Back then there was nothing. And he says, I'm going to build 18 yeshivas. And what do you think? What names did he want to give them? Let's hear a guess. What names did he want to give them? What? Nice. No? What names did he want to call the yeshivas? What? The towns in Europe. Excellent. Beautiful. Right? Which towns specifically? The ones that had yeshivas. He wanted, we're going to talk about that in the next section, he wanted to redo the Torah world of Europe. That's what he was dreaming about, right? And he wasn't, this is another beautiful thing, he wasn't just dreaming about yeshivas for regular yeshiva men, he was dreaming about yeshivas for balabat and people who worked all year. He had whole plans of something called Yarchei Kala. You know, the Gemara talks about Yarchei Kala, times the months when everybody goes to learn, right? So you have your makolet, you're a lawyer, you're a doctor, beautiful. But a month a year, 2 months a year, you're going to pack out and you're going to be a yeshiva student for that year. And he did that. Panovich Adiyom Hazeh in Bnei Brak, they have like a 60-year tradition, I think, built by the Panovich Rav, that you go and you spend time, and that's where Rav Shach used to give some of his biggest drushes, his most famous talks, were at the beginning of what they call the Yarchei Kala. That institution was by the Panovich Rav. And he wasn't just dreaming about yeshivas for yeshiva students and blah, blah, blah. I think he was dreaming about tshuva of chilonim, tshuva of the secular world, which we're going to end with that in about half hour. We have to appreciate today, you know, the power of the distaste that secular people used to have for religion in Israel was very, very strong back then in the 40s, 50s. It was very strong. I have a friend whose father grew up in Netanya. He says he remembers people coming over and whipping away his kippah for no reason. Understand? Listen, you're not going to believe this story, but this is a story. There's a place called Ein Harod. Ein Harod, if you drive up to the Lavi Hotel, you can go past it. There's a story. This is the story. So there was a Holocaust survivor. It was a very secular kibbutz. There's a Holocaust survivor, and he said that he was coming to see his son, who was a member of the Ein Harod kibbutz. He had a little Sefer Torah that miraculously made it through the war with him. So he's got him and his little Sefer Torah, and they're going to visit his son in Ein Harod. Fine. What happens? They're on the way to the kibbutz. Emergency meeting, right? The kibbutz said, you can come. We don't want the Sefer Torah in our midst. Could you imagine such a thing? The hatred for religion was so deep that they didn't want to have any hashpa'ah. They didn't want to have any effect from the Sefer Torah. And the Panovich Rebbe called those people, and he said, you know what? They are also going to do tshuva. They are going to wear tefillin one day. They're not going to be the way they always were. So his vision was the whole thing. I'm going to read you what he wrote, what he said then. Who am I calling? There was one time there's a meeting about Shemitah observance, observing the seventh year, letting the land lay fallow. Who am I calling? Even to the people from Shar HaGolan, right? That was one of the, he used to talk about these two kibbutzim, Shar HaGolan and En Harod, that they divorced from themselves the Sefer Torah, in order their kids shouldn't see the Torah. I'm not mityayesh, I don't give up on any Jew. This is not a dream. It says in the Torah, "Built yidach menonidach, no Jew will be left behind." If you don't, just like, if you don't believe that God's going to take you out of Mitzrayim, then you don't believe in that God is one. And there's another verse which says every Jew is going to come back, and you have to believe that also. If you don't believe every Jew is going to come back, there's something wrong with your emunah. This is the type of person he was. He was dreaming. There was an old Talmud Chacham who used to be in Eish HaTorah called Chaim Uri Freund. Today he's on the Bedatz. You know, the Bedatz, it's a real group of people. It's not just the Heksher. There are people, the Bedatz. You know, they're the real, real people. So anyway, he was an old friend of Noach Weinberg, of Noach, our Rosh Yeshiva. And he said he remembers the Panovich Rav coming into Eitz Chaim Yeshiva when it was a small yeshiva. It's you know, on the train, along the train route. It's on the left. They sold it recently. Called Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. That was the yeshiva back then. And he says he remembers the Panovich Rav coming in and saying, "Guys, you got to take out the bima. There's not going to be room for all the students that are coming in." They thought he was a meshugana. There was plenty of room. But this room, you say, like, you know, I'm waiting. I know, but at 4:45, it's going to be packed. Right? Move over a little, huh? Avrami, right? Move over a little. You know, they're coming. They're all coming. Schoolmakers of Meshuggah. It's okay to have eight guys in the shul. You don't have to be so upset. That's how they looked at him. So we see six people in Panovich. We see plenty of room in Eitz Chaim Yeshiva. We see secular people who aren't interested in Judaism. And he saw the greatest yeshiva in the world. He saw a full base medrash. He saw the whole Jewish people coming back to Yiddishkeit. And a lot of people said, you can imagine, they said, he is a Meshuggah. People said, I used to hear him speak about his plans and what he was talking about, and I thought he was nuts, and there was nothing was going to be done. And the Chazon Ish said about him, he says, yes, it's true that he's a Baal Dimi. You know what Baal Dimi means? Like a dreamer. Like, you know, yeah, you have any friends like that? You guys? Friends like that? Someone's dreaming. I'm a very practical guy, you know, from the little talks I talked in Gesher. I'm practical. There are people who are real dreamers. And you speak to dreamers when you're a practical person and you think they're crazy because they're not grounded. You know, there's a reality. So people looked at him and said, you've lost touch with reality. In fact, what do people say? He lost, this is also part of his greatness, he lost his wife and I believe 12 children in the war. 12 children, can you imagine? And people said it was because of that he was deranged. People really looked at him. He was a great goon, he was a great rabbi. He has all these crazy plans. He lost something in the war. He himself said about himself that... he had how many kidneys? What do you say? Well, three possibilities.
One, two, or three.
Three. Well, that's three. Zero, one, or two. Oh, really? Or one. He had one kidney. Now, I'll say it the way he said it. It says in, our rabbis tell us that Eitzah comes from the kidneys. I don't know what that means exactly, but discernment and counsel comes from the kidneys. Different parts of the body give different things. The heart gives a certain type of wisdom, the head gives a different type of wisdom. That's what our rabbi, I don't know exactly what it means, that just says. So Eitzah, the ability for counsel, someone gives good advice, it means that his kidneys are working the right way. Right? What that means exactly, I don't know. But that's what it says, the rabbi say. So how many kidneys did the Panovich Rav have? He had one. He had one kidney. And he said to Reb Shlomo Zalman one time, he said, it was good I had only one kidney. Why? He says, because my one kidney, my right kidney said to me, Yaska. His name is Yosef Shlomo, he called it Yaska. Rebuild Panovich to what it was before the war. Rebuild it, make it, bring it back. He said, if I would have had another kidney, it would have turned to the first one kidney and said, Yaska, Dubista Meshuggah, you're crazy. But I didn't have a second kidney, so the first kidney, which said to rebuild Panovich, I listened to it and I tried to rebuild it. Nesiva Shalom, Rabosa. Who knows the book Nesiva Shalom?
Yeah.
One of the greatest, most accepted books today. It's written by the Rebbe of Slonim. So he was, I'm going to read you a story, we're going to end this section with this. He one time, this is such a beautiful story, he was running the yeshiva in Slonim. Okay? You know where Slonim is, in back streets of Mea Sharm. So he's running the yeshiva, and they didn't have any money. So and he went to speak to, here's a picture if you ever saw him. I met him in Tulsa one time. Yeshiva Shalom. It's a very famous book, you'll see it around. So he explained to the Panovich Rav what a terrible situation the yeshiva was in, and he didn't know what to do. So the Panovich Rav said, my Rebbe, the Chafetz Chaim, would tell you you have to close the yeshiva. Right? You can't close the yeshiva. You can't pay the rabbis. You can't run such an institution. You can't have such an institution. So the Slonim Rebbe says, what are you telling me? He says, I'm going to build a yeshiva, and I'm going to go upstairs, and they're going to give me punishment? Right? If you're supposed to halachically close the yeshiva, and you don't, it means you're going to get punished for it. You're doing the wrong thing, right? If you're doing the wrong thing, you're going to get punished. So the Nesivah Shalom couldn't understand. I'm going to go upstairs after all I did to build the yeshiva, and because I wasn't, whatever it was, whatever way I had to run the yeshiva correctly, which I couldn't because I didn't have money, I'm going to get punished for it. So the Panovich Rav says, you're going to get makas. He says, but aber vaizis valen zayn di schmitzt. Now you get that? He says, you're going to get smacked. But you know what? Those are going to be the best smacks you ever get in your whole life. You get it? Hashem is going to give you that with such love. You're going to get smacked. But it's going to be, you got smacked for Torah, Avram. What are you going to get smacked for? You're going to get smacked by Hashem because of Torah. You got smacked because you had yeshiva. It's going to be the best thing. So then the Shiva Shalom said, ah, now I hear the voice of the Panovich Rav. That's what I was coming to hear from you. Not the psak that it's us, sir. I wanted to hear that. Okay? So this is the person. What do we got so far? Ultimate Torah genius. Ultimate Mesiras Nefesh, right? Someone gave up everything to make it happen. And a person who had dreams and visions. Now, Rabbi Gindi already hit this. We start to get a picture. Now what I want to talk about is his keen historical sense. This is not such a popular thing today. What does it mean, historical sense? We said already before that he wanted to make not one yeshiva, he wanted to make 18 yeshivas. But he didn't want to make 18 yeshivas. He wanted to redo Baranovich. He wanted to redo Panovich. He wanted to redo Slobodka. He wanted to bring the world which had disappeared back to life. Right? Not only that, listen to this. This is wild. He wanted to have a certain base medrash which had the number of seats of destroyed Lithuanian communities. Is there something more beautiful than that? Could you imagine? Understand that every community that was destroyed should have a seat in this base medrash. It's going to be like the seat of those communities. And he had another idea. He had Yarchei Kala. Every year you take out a month to learn. He wanted to have Yom HaDekala, which for every community, right? We know, unfortunately, if you read Martin Gilbert's book, The Holocaust, they know the Nazis kept, Yimach Shemam kept good records. They know what days communities were destroyed. We know when Kelm was destroyed. We know when Vasil Shuk was destroyed. So he wanted to have like a special day of learning for each of those communities. And that was like a day that was Mukdash, a day that was sanctified to the remembrance of those communities. And this is even more stirring. This is an even more stirring thing. What do you do when you went to Rome, huh? Anybody ever go to Rome? Rome? Nobody? Where do you go? Visit the Pope? I don't go visit the Pope. I went to Rome.
You go to the library when
you went to Rome.
I went to Rome. I had a Chow Baby t-shirt on, my sister, and I played like gladiator with my sister in the Colosseum. So I want to tell you what the Panovich Rav did when he went to Rome. Now, you get a picture.
I went to the Arch.
Oh, how do you know? You are on fire today.
Rabbi?
You're on fire. You're unbelievable. I'm blown away. I'm blown. So he went. So this is the story. He said he went. Listen to this speech. He went with a person named Moshe Rothschild. He says, I went with Rabbeinu in the streets, and suddenly he says, I'm going to be Gomer Cheshbon, Achas Lutambit. You know what Gomer Cheshbon means? You know, it's like in the Israeli mafia, they say, I'm going to be Gomer Cheshbon. You know, so that means we're finishing. We're Ligmor at the Cheshbon. You did something wrong to me, and now I'm going to kill you, and the Cheshbon's finished. That's Ligmor at the Cheshbon. So the Panovich Rav is whispering to himself, I'm going to be finished a Cheshbon once and forever. I didn't know what he was talking about. So he takes me to Shar Titus, and he says, stop here. So he goes to the Shar. You know what the Shar Titus is? It has like a picture of the menorah going to Gaulis. They have in Ken Spiro's books a picture of it. You've seen it. It has Titus, the Romans who destroyed the base of Mikdash. So there's a picture there of the Romans walking away with the menorah and stuff. So he's talking to Titus. You know, Titus is dead 2,000 years. Titus! 1,000 years ago, you tried to destroy the Jewish people, that nothing of them would be left. Titus, who knows about you today, right? Nothing is left from your grand ideas. Does anybody see themselves as I'm a continuer of Titus's heritage? I'm a Titusnik, and I'm coming today from Bnei Brak in Israel that you wanted to destroy, and I'm at a yeshiva that has over 5,000 students that are learning Torah Yom V'Laila that Torah you wanted to forget of us. Besides hundreds of other yeshivas, it didn't even finish. You destroyed the base of Mikdash, but come today to the Western Wall. Come see how Jews are standing and crying for the Chorb and crying for the destruction, and they're waiting for the base of Mikdash to be rebuilt.
And they even learn every year, they learn about how the Beis HaMikdash is. And this is a grand sign that the Beis HaMikdash will be rebuilt. You were forgotten forever, and your name is lost. Yehuda chaya tichya, but Yehuda will live and go on, uparoch tifrach. Could you imagine such a person? Bosa, that's an unbelievable man, you understand? This is a man who lives in a different planet. That's what he does when he goes to Rome. This is what he's thinking about. I'm going to be Gomer Cheshbon with Titus. It's finished. I got to give the speech to him. Okay? So now, I think this is just my...
It's wild.
Huh? So this is my historical...
Is it modern Hebrew or Rabbinic Hebrew?
No, this is modern Hebrew. You can read it. This is a great book. This is one of the best. It's in English also. It says the whole thing, Yehuda Chaya Tichya Paroch Tifrach, because they said Judea Kapatia or something. It was something against the Romans. I didn't get that. Anyway, guys. So... What? It will blossom. Mefroch means to blossom. So I think part of the ability that he had, this sheds light on what we said at the beginning. What gave him the ability to build so much and give up so much of himself? So a lot of it was that historical sense. You understand, when you feel you're a historical figure, anybody here feel like historical figures? Rav Noach was a historical figure, you know? I look at myself, you know, I'll live, get Parnassus, I hope they're going to start paying again soon, you know? My son made a nice shidduch last 7 months ago, you know, and I teach a few guys, you know, come to Gesher once every 2 weeks. You know, but I don't see myself like a historical figure. I don't see myself that I'm carrying history with me. I have to remake the history, understand? He lived with such a keen historical sense that there was such a beautiful thing that was going on, the Torah and Eretz Yisrael, with all the in Europe, which all the problems, and the Panovich Rav knew the problems, but the yeshiva was so beautiful and the Jewish community had such beauty. I have to rebuild that. I have to bring that in, you understand? How much more could we do as people? How much greater would leaders would we be or begin to be if we had a vision like that? What you want to be a leader? We're talking about leadership here. What do we want to build? What's your tochnit? What's your plan? It's convenient. It's fun to be called a leader, right? Oh, leader. It sounds, I don't know. The worst thing to call anybody is a follower. I'm a leader. What are you leading to? What are you leading to? Panovich Rav had such a clear vision of what he was leading to. I'm leading back to Panovich. I'm leading back to Tells. I'm leading back to Branovich. I'm leading back to Slobodko. Okay? Okay. Next thing. Great men, and you guys heard my talk on Rav Noach? Great men have in themselves opposite poles. Okay? Can you hear that? Great men have in themselves opposite poles. I spoke on Shabbos about the fact that on the one hand there was tremendous achdus, v'yichan sham Yisrael neged ahar, the whole Jewish people was together, but the Ibn Ezra says v'yichan was singular, but the Zakenim were in front. Achdus, yeah, but we give honor who's due. Honor is the opposite of, honor is like separation. Achdus, everybody together, right? Just stand on a van and dance. No, I can have achdus, we're all together, But the Zakenim are still in front. Can you hear it? That's a great person can have in himself opposing poles and find the right way. And that's what Torah is all about. That's why Torah is given in the third month. But that's not for now. So the Panovich Rav, you see the same thing. A person who's living with visions of the past, huh? Usually how does he view the people who are around him today?
They're to rebuild.
But how does he view them? You know, are they like A1 citizens or are they like second class? Hear this? I'm living to rebuild European Jewry. So how do I look at American Jewry? How do I look at Israel? It's missing, lacking. These guys are, my father-in-law told me he was a student at RJJ. That was one of the biggest yeshivas. A lot of the Rosh Yeshivas, like they couldn't deal with the fact, the American apple pie eating student they had. You know, they were imagining they were going to be great leaders and great Rosh Yeshivas and teachers in Europe. And they get to America and they're talking to guys who are playing baseball. They didn't. This is my students now. You got like this is they couldn't cross that gap, and many of them for that reason weren't good, sometimes good rabbanim or good talmid chachamim. And the ones who crossed that gap ended up the ones who really knew how to touch the door. So the Panovich Rav, with all of historical sense, we would imagine he didn't have too much belief in today's people. Can you hear that? But it's the opposite, right? It's the opposite. He used to say, listen to this. He used to say that the young generation is much better than the generation from before. 65 years ago, there was a great generation of God-fearing people, but today, even though we live in a surrounding which is against us, The student today looks at all that and says no to it, and he's on a higher level than those before. My son told me, it's famous, that he and Rav Shach had a machlokas. Rav Shach said that this generation is worse in lumdus, and in really Talmudic understanding things, we're worse. And the Pavan Richard Rav used to say that the Bachram today are better in Havana, in a certain point, they're better in understanding, whatever we call lumdus, to be able to see what's exactly the machlokas Rashi Tosis. Today's door is better than the old generation, which goes against the normal klal that the generations get lower. In this point, he held that they get that higher. And he himself, another book I read, that he said that there were great masmidim in Europe. There are great people who learn all the time. But he had Bein Hazmanim boys sitting, like they're sitting today in Panovich. During Bein Hazmanim, they don't know what vacation is. That we didn't have in Europe. That's like Pella Ploim. So he was always looking to see the greatness of this generation. And at the same time that he lived with the vision of the past and wanted to rebuild the past, that didn't in any way take away from his appreciation of what was around right then. Oh. So I think what we mentioned before, his the fact that he built this Yarchei Kala, these yeshivas for working people, also shows that, right? A lot of people are like, oh, Torah is for the elite. Torah is for the best students. Torah is someone who can learn 12 hours a day, right? I'll give a shiur once a week for a working person. No, the Pandit Vichara believed in these people 100%. I'm going to give them a Torah experience equal to the students' Torah experience for a month, every year, and then they come. And even though we said before he gave up the yeshiva to Rav Shach and to Rav Dessler and to the others. You know one yeshiva that he ran that he gave up, that he ran only on his own? Was Yarchei Kala. That he didn't give up to anybody. That he was always at Yarchei Kala from the beginning to the end. This was my yeshiva. And he didn't give it up to anyone. This has to be taken care of by me. Someone said to him one time, you're gonna teach these people like Gemara Ashitosis, like regular stuff. You gotta give them like interesting things. He says, no, we're daf gonna teach them Gemara Rashi Tosis because we believe in them. The Jewish heart, when it runs into Tosis, likes it. Yeah? That was his belief in people. So you have to imagine also here that how much more could we accomplish? How much more hashpa'ah could we have if we would really believe in people? You know, as a Rebbe, I'm telling you, that's one day I might have a little bit as a Rebbe. That's why I'm a little bit tough on my students in a certain way. Not in this class, but in Gemara, you know. I try to be a little tough, you know, because I believe in people. You know what I hate in Eishes Torah sometimes? You have a guy who gives a Dvar Torah, and everybody goes over and hugs him after the Dvar Torah. You ever see that? No, you ever see downstairs? This used to happen. I know you guys stay for Shabbos that much, right? But, you know, everybody goes over and hugs him. Now, I'm not sorry if it's a new guy in yeshiva, see, it's the first time you ever spoke in public. But a guy who's been around for a while, what are you telling to him? Atat tembel, I wouldn't expect that you could have done it, right? No one's going to give me a hug after this class. Why? Because, you know, the rabbi speaks a little bit, he can give a class. So I expect the guy is able to give, say, a valid, normal, intelligent, coherent Torah thought. You don't deserve a hug for that. Me hugging you is an insult to your intelligence. Can you hear that? You understand? But okay, that's a side point about schoolmaker. I'm just saying, also, we have to believe in people. You have to believe in yourselves. You have to believe in your friends. You have to believe in your program. If you believe in yourself and you believe in others, then people will rise to what you believe them. And I'm telling you again, so many Rabbanim came over and didn't believe in the new generation. And they couldn't relate to the new generation. And they didn't see the greatness in the new generation. And it's highly understandable that they looked at it that way from what they were expecting was going to be and what they got. You understand, they were open people. They were very knowledgeable people. They were worldly people. But like baseball, apple pie, that wasn't part of their European world. That wasn't, you know, they were debaters. They knew philosophy. They knew things like that. But baseball, apple pie, radio, this, it was all shtuyot to them. It was all foolishness. And they couldn't see the beauty of the students that were there. But the Pandit Vichara saw it. Okay.
You're talking about falls of great leaders.
What?
Excuse
me?
It's on the poll.
Yeah, I'll do that in a second. I'll do another poll in a second. I'll pull it all together. Now, another thing was like this. I'm going to. You know, trust me.
Pull them together?
I'm going to pull them together. A lot of times, you can imagine the Pandit Vicharav, in order to do what he had to do, it was a very, very independent person, right? Most people wouldn't do things that other people look at as being still stupid, silly, and dreamlike because they can't deal with the pressure of other people looking at them like nutcases. We hear that? Does that make sense? Right? So the Pandit Vicharav certainly had a very, very independent streak. He was a very highly independent person. Now, a lot of times, independent person, what's it hard for an independent person to take or to have?
Relatability.
Relatability, good. What else? It's hard for him to really take advice. It's hard for him to have rabbis, right? I don't need a rabbi. I know. I'm independent, right? I'm not independent, and I'm turning to my rabbi all the time for guidance. So we would expect someone as independent and as free-spirited as the Panovich Rav wouldn't have been into his Rebbeim, but we find the opposite. I'll tell you, the first time the Panovich Rav is already an accomplished person. He already was working in yeshiva. He was working in Telz at the time, and he went to visit the Chavetz Chaim. Okay, fine. Comes into the Chavetz Chaim waiting room, and he hears terrible screams. You know, terrible screams, like gut-wrenching screams. Again and again and again. And he sees the Rebbetzin, the Chavetz Chaim's wife, is walking around like nothing's going on. And again, these gut wrenches. And finally, it got to like this point of strong, continuous screams that he couldn't hold himself back anymore. And he turned to the Chavetz Chaim's wife and he said, "You know, what is going on here?" He's like, "What is going on? What are these screams?" So she said, "Let's haste. Like, what do you mean? There's a woman who's having problems bearing a child. You know, and my husband's davening for her." And that's how the Chavetz Chaim used to daven. And the Panovich Rav realized it wasn't just, you know, this one-time occurrence. From the fact that she was dealing with this in a normal way, this is what happened in the Chavetz Chaim's house in Radin all the time. You know, he used to daven like crazy. If I would come home and start screaming, my wife would tell me, you know, "I'm calling Kfar Shaul for you. I'm calling getting the ambulance over here. What are you doing? You don't get so upset about things." But the Chavetz Chaim, so he says, if that's how the Chavetz Chaim is, I'm not leaving here, and I'm going to be with him my whole life. You know, that's what he said. He's going to be my Rebbe. And he made the Chavetz Chaim into his Rebbe. Now, you'd say, okay, that's still, he was young. He was about 30 at the time, or 28 or so. But when he gets to Eretz Yisrael, he's already has a yeshiva for a long time, Panovich. He's the Rav of Panovich. He had the Panovich yeshiva in Europe, which is coming in 1940 to rebuild. He said, from the time I got here, I have a new Rebbe now, the Chazon Ish. The Chavetz Chaim's not with us anymore. And I figure out the ages one time. I don't even think the Chazon Ish was so much older than him. Right? I don't think so. He said, the Chazon Ish is my new rabbi. And he used to say, when he would vote, he'd say, "I'm coming to be Mekayim in the mitzvah. I'm coming to fulfill the commandment of listening to my rabbi." Because the Chavetz Chaim says to vote, so that's why I'm voting. And the boys on Simchas Torah would pick the Chavetz Chaim up on a chair. They would try to pick him up again. Also, you know, two great gedolim on a chair. And he would stand there and dance in front of the Chavetz Chaim. He didn't want to, Chavetz Chaim was the man, and he was below him. And he wanted that to be clear to everybody, and it was clear to him. And he used to say, in Torah, I can fight with the Chazon Ish. If it comes to a pshat and a rashba, he says his way, and I say my way, we can fight about it. Just like I can fight with the B'ki Vager. When it comes to things in the world, about, you know, intelligence, about understanding what's going on, I don't stand a candle to him, right? So this again is an unbelievable poll. Right? You see, you have to appreciate that. That's what I mean, a great man. A great man has these different poles. Let's think about the poles we learned. Right? On the one hand, he's a great Talmud Chacham, who loves to learn, loves to be a Rebbe. On the other hand, he's Moser Nefesh of all of that, right? That's two separate poles. It's easier to be a communal worker if you don't like learning so much. Right? It's harder to be a big communal worker if you really like to learn, you'd rather be learning. Many people don't go into community activities so much because they like to learn so much, right? That's one pole. The other pole I'm saying is this deep historical sense, right? Together with believing in the new generation, which also don't fit together so well. The other poles that he had was being this independent spirit who can deal with people saying he's crazy, and at the same time, believe so much in the next generation, right? Having such an independent spirit, right? But yet being so into his rabbis. That's what I mean. That's a great man, Rabosa. If you want to know if you're getting somewhere in life, that's what you can see. Can I, do I have a place in myself of opposites? Can opposites exist in me in a happy way? Or is it either always yes or no? This or that? I don't have a middle ground. I don't have a way to bring different parts of me together. I don't develop different parts of me. Right, if I'm into learning, I'm not into chesed. I'm into chesed, I'm not into learning. If I'm into davening, I'm not into learning. If I'm into davening, I'm not into chesed. No, I'm into davening, and I'm into learning, and I'm into chesed, and there's no stira. And it all exists by me, and it all has its proper time. And I know how to balance. I know how to sometimes say to someone, "I'm learning now, I can't talk to you." I know how sometimes to close my gemara and say, I won't talk to you. Yeah, that's balance. Okay, we're getting there. Just a few more points.
There's the framework to understand how much learning and how much testing you should be doing.
Oh, that's a hard one.
So,
I just want to. It's a hard one. We're just finishing. We're finished it. What should we? Should we talk about how he was matzliach in with the tzibur, or should we talk about him in the tshuva movement? Which one do you want to hear about? We're ending at 5. When are we ending?
5:10.
5:10. Okay, so you have a few more minutes. We can do this. So he was tremendously matzliach.
He was. What? Okay, so we're gonna end at 5:05. We're ending at 5:05. So he was tremendously matzliach, like we said, in building things. He was this great builder, right? So how did he do it? So I want to give a few things I gleaned about. How did he build all these orphanages and girls' schools and yeshivas and things like that? By the way, we don't have time to go into this, but he had a tremendous wit. He was a very witty person. So a certain wealthy person said to him, you know what, I will give you money for yeshiva, but listen, I don't want no yarmulkes and no payas in the yeshiva. None of that. So what would you say? You take the $1 million or no? No, I can't eat cheese. He said, I'll take the money. He took the money and he built the Beis Yaakov.
Okay. So now that's a true story to say. So how was he so much Leah? How was he so successful? What was the secret that where so many other people couldn't build such great institutions? He built so many. So I think one thing was we mentioned already was the ability to give over to other people. You know, Truman. Harry Truman, you know him? President after...
Yeah,
I met him. So, Harry Truman said, I think it was him, or Eisenhower, I think it was Truman said, you can accomplish almost anything if you don't want to take credit for it. Yeah? A lot of times, we don't get things done because we're looking to take credit, so it doesn't let us take things done. But someone else will get the credit. So, the Panovitcherov wanted a great yeshiva. The fact that, and he gave it over, and this is a difficult thing. It's a very difficult thing to do. He said, I want to have a great yeshiva. It's more important that I have a great yeshiva than I have a lot of ego in my yeshiva. So he gave the yeshiva over to other people. Okay? Another point that one time there was this story I heard from someone who heard it from Hirsch Pillay, who was the mashgiach in Hebron yeshiva. And he said, you know, he was doing great in the yeshiva, but whenever he would try to do something in the tzibur, whenever you try to do something outside of the yeshiva to help somewhere, build something, etc., he was never worked out. So he said, I went to the Gadol Ador, the greatest man in the generation in getting things done in the tzibur, the Panovitcher, and I asked him, how do you do it? So he says, I want to give you a lesson from Chumash. Yaakov, when he saw the shepherds bring their flocks in early, right, that was when he met Rachel right after that. So he says to them, why are you bringing the flocks so early? Lo eight ha'asef ha'miknet. It's too early. It's not yet time. The day's not over. It's not 5:05 yet. Why are you bringing the flocks so early? And he said, achai. He said, my brothers, it's not time yet. That was what he said. So he was giving them musr. He was saying, you're stopping working too early. But he started his rebuke to them with the words, my brother. And the Panovitcherov said, if you want to work with people correctly, outside of the yeshiva, you can't be coming with a high-minded perspective that I know and you don't know. We're brothers, right? That's just like Yaakov said, and they accepted it, because Yaakov was saying that we're brothers, Briderlach, like you say in Yiddish, we're brothers, and Yaakov looked at himself as their brother, and he made them feel that they were brothers, and then they could hear what they had to say. Right? That's a simple way to be matzliach. So you want to get anything done, you want to build the yeshiva, you need a lot of support. Right, there's a picture here of him kissing someone. It says the point, I can't find the picture, but you see someone like, people felt around him that he loved them and that he appreciated them, and he was not looking at them. He knew who he was, you know. Here's a picture of him kissing, you know, somebody else. You can see there's another picture here of like people surrounding him. You can see the love and appreciation which people had for him, because they knew that he loved them back and he didn't look down on them and he was a brother to them. Okay.
This is your book.
In my book, yeah. He was also not bipartisan. You know what that means? A lot of people, all they care about is their institution. My shul, my day school, my high school, my yeshiva. That's how people are. He was the opposite. He cared about all the institutions. Lakewood was going to close its doors because of the tremendous financial pressure that they were under. Who came to the who saved the day? The Panovich Rav, right? You can call Shner Kaler. Hey, Shner Kaler by that. He told them to speak to my, he called his people, but you understand, people don't do that, because if I ask my person for money for Lakewood, he's not going to give as much to Panovich. That's how it works. But he didn't care about just about his institution, he cared about Torah. Okay? Our Rosh Yeshiva, Reb Hillel, was Mashkiach before he was Rosh Yeshiva in Eshet Torah. He was the Mashkiach of Slobodki Yeshiva. How did Slobodki Yeshiva start? Slobodki Yeshiva is in Bnei Brak. So when it started, Rabbi Yitzchak Isaac Sher was worried that if I start a yeshiva here, it's going to hurt Panovich. It's a competing yeshiva. So he went to the Chazon Ish, and he says, and the Chazon Ish says to him, Adarabai, all the yeshivas could come. Either this is the Panovich Rav or this is the Chazon Ish speaking about the Panovich Rav. You don't understand the man. What he wants is that all yeshivas should come to Bnei Brak and it'll become the Torah center of the world. He's not worried about Panovich. Okay, so those are three tools. If you want to be matzliach, you have to do. You have to be able to give over responsibility to other people and not hold it all to yourself. You have to be bipartisan in your interests, right? And finally, you must include other people in an inclusive way and see them as your partners and not look down on them. And really love them and appreciate them. So this is the Panovich Rav. Okay, I said I'm going to stop at 5:05. He was a great Torah Gaon, who was most nefesh for Torah and for the Jewish people totally. And he wasn't afraid to dream and be called a dreamer. And because of all those dreams, and because of all that historical sense, and because of all that mesiras nefesh, so much of Torah today that is in Eretz Yisrael, we have because of him. He's Zichro Baruch. His name should be a blessing, and we should learn from his ways, each of us, in our own way. Okay, thank you.